Sometimes it feels like the world is moving at hyperspeed and you can't keep up because it's one thing, then another, and don't forget the meeting and the yoga class and the dinner reservation, but then you get into the all-new Nissan Murano, and you feel the breeze from the panoramic moonroof, while the massaging seats melt away the tension of the day. And you realize that sometimes the greatest rush is not rushing at all. Shop the all-new Murano at NissanUSA.com. Panoramic moonroof massaging leather-appointed seats are available features.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
And thank you all for tuning in, and welcome to the world of beyond here on Mystery Frequency. Your place for sci-fi, creature feature, aliens, and glimpses of the world of tomorrow. There's something about sci-fi stories that gets our imagination going. Stories that, if told right, stick with us for days. And you'll find plenty of those in today's lineup. If you enjoyed this episode, please let me know through the usual ways. All those links can be found in the description as well as the comments on Spotify. And if you enjoy this podcast, please take the time to follow, review, leave a 5-star rating, and to share the podcast with anyone you know. Now with all that, please enjoy the show.
Countdown for blast off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on 1,000 maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction, presents
X-1.
Tonight, the Ray Bradbury story entitled, And the Moon Be Still as Bright.
The first three expeditions for Mars left Earth in a mushroom of flame, arced through the atmosphere, and finally dwindled to tiny specks in the big eye of the Mount Palomar telescope, and then were lost to sight forever. The prearranged landing signals flashed back to Earth, and then the radios went dead. One after the other, ships had disappeared and were never heard from again. But still, the rockets came. The fourth expedition emerged from the silent gulfs of space, angled down toward the floating red disk of Mars, down into an orbit as the order came to land. The last blast of the bow jets broke red against the blue desert sands. And the ship slid to a halt at the edge of a vast city that reflected the icy glare of the moonlight. For a while, all was still.
All right, Park, you. Open the airlock.
Hi, sir.
Fresh air.
Hey, it's cold out here.
Who cares? We got here. I thought I'd never hit solid ground again.
Hey, how about a fire, Captain Wildey? It's freezing.
Later. We have work to do.
Oh, smell that air. Why, you could get drunk on it. Say, there's an idea. Why don't we break out a bottle and celebrate?
Biggs, there will be no drinking done till we're secured.
But we're landed, Captain.
Three other expeditions landed and disappeared within 24 hours. Now, we're not relaxing security till we find out what happened to them.
What do you mean? Maybe Martians?
Sender, you're an archaeologist. How old would you say they are?
I can't tell till I study them more closely. It's the kind of engineering we couldn't duplicate on Earth.
Well, I'm not interested in the architecture now. I want to make sure there's nothing there that might be dangerous. Mr. Hathaway.
Yes, sir?
I want you and Spender to take a reconnaissance party into the city and find out what's there. We'll set up camp here. No man is to go more than 50 feet from this rocket. And there'll be no celebration till Hathaway and his party report back.
In the sea bottoms, the wind stirred along faint vapors, and from the mountains, great stone visages looked upon the silvery rocket and the small fire. The sky was black overhead, as the two racing moons threw knife-edged double shadows on the desert.
All right, come and get it. Ciao.
Hey, what do you got to eat, Jackie?
Sorta smothered in cold chicken fat.
Good. I thought it was something I couldn't eat. Hey, Captain. Mr. Hathaway's back.
Oh, Captain. Captain Wilder.
Oh, yes, over here, Mr. Hathaway. Well?
Most of the city's dead. Spender says it's been dead a good many thousand years, but we found one part about a mile over
toward
the...
What about it?
People were living in it last week, sir.
People?
Martians.
Where are they now?
Dead. We found bodies, thousands of bodies. They hadn't been dead more than 10 days.
When did they die of?
You won't believe it.
What killed them?
Chickenpox.
Chickenpox?
Yes.
Where could they get chickenpox?
From Earth.
Oh, then the other rockets did get through.
Yes. I don't know what the Martians did to them, but I sure know what they did to the Martians. They gave them chickenpox and wiped them out. They just didn't have any resistance to an Earth disease.
Think of it, Captain. A race builds itself for a million years, refines itself, does everything it can to give itself respect and beauty, and then it dies. Of what? It's like saying the Greeks died of mumps or the proud Roman Empire collapsed because of athlete's foot. We didn't even give them a decent excuse for dying. We just gave them chicken pox.
Spender, get hold of yourself.
You didn't see those bodies, Captain.
Yes, I know. It must have been a shock. You need a rest, a little relaxation. The Martians are dead. There's nothing you can do about that now.
Hey, you hear that? The Martians are all dead. Come on, let's break out a bottle and hoop it up. How about a case, eh?
Good Lord. They have to do that now? Isn't there time later to throw old beer cans into the canals?
Bender, you're an idealist. They're not. All they know now is that they're safe. A little shouting won't hurt. You think too much.
I was safe on Mars. The first Earthmen on Mars. We gotta celebrate. Yahoo!
20 bottles were opened and drunk. The voices got louder. The Earth laughs and shouts echoing across the empty Martian sands. Spender listened to the wind over his ears, cool and whispering. He felt the land getting cooler. The stars drew closer, very near. The air smelled clean and new. He looked at the cool ice of the white Martian buildings over there on the empty sea lands.
Oh, what a woman! Hey, what do we do with these empty bottles?
Save them, stupid. There's a 2 cents deposit.
Throw them away!
Hey, wait. How about that building? 2-1 on a buck, I can heave one right through that window.
You're on.
All right, here goes. Bullseye! Hey, double or nothing on the next shot.
Put that bottle down, Biggs.
Who's there, Mr. Spender?
Stop smashing those windows.
What's the difference? The planet's ours now. I guess I can do anything with it I want.
Drop that bottle or I'll knock your teeth out.
Yeah? Hey, just watch me.
I warned you.
Hey,
come on.
What's going on here? Spender! Spender!
I hit him.
He's crazy, Captain. He just walked up and slugged me.
All right, Biggs. Spender, you come with me. Now, suppose you explain. What was the idea?
The noise, the drunken brawl.
Spender, the men are tired. This has been a long trip. And you have a different way of seeing things.
Oh, I'm seeing things, all right. I'm seeing how we'll ruin Mars. We'll rip it up and rip the skin off the way we've already ruined Earth.
Is that why you hit Biggs?
Yes. I couldn't stand the idea of them watching us make fools of ourselves.
Them?
The Martians.
They're dead. They're all dead.
But they know we're here. Doesn't an old thing always know when a new thing comes? We've come a long way to smash their windows and spit in their wine.
Well, maybe you're right. But I'm still going to fine you $50 for that fight. Now, come on, Spender. Suck in your chin. We'll go back there and play happy.
Now they moved out into the moonlight across the desert. They made their way into the dreaming, dead city. The light of the racing twin moons glinted on the barrel of a pistol, the long blade of a machete, the round, gurgling shape of a raised bottle. The wind blew in from the dead sea bottom and brushed through the silvery wire filigree of the towers. Strange music drifted down to the double-shadowed streets, a thin, haunted music that played as it had played through the uncounted years of time. Nobody moved. The moons held and froze them. The wind beat slowly around them.
Hey! Hey, you people in the city!
Biggs,
I just want to make a little noise. What kind of a celebration is this, anyway?
Come on.
They built this city thousands of years ago. And now where are they? How did they die?
Who cares? They're dead. That's good enough for me.
Lord Byron.
What?
Lord Byron, a 19th century poet. He wrote a poem that fits this city. Might have been written by the last Martian poet. So we'll go no more a-roving so late into the night. Though the heart be still as loving, though the moon be still as bright. For the sword outwears its sheath and the soul outwears its breast. And the heart must pause to breathe, and love itself must rest. Though the night was made for loving, and the day returns too soon, yet we'll go no more a-roving by the light of the moon.
Without a word, the Earthmen stood in the center of the city. It was a clear night. There was not a sound except the music of the wind. At their feet lay a tile court, worked into the shapes of ancient animals and images. They stood there, silvered by the double moons beneath the crystal towers of Mars. And then Biggs was sick, and the sour stench of liquor filled the cool air. The men of Earth had come to Mars. And Spender turned and walked away into the city, alone in the moonlight, never once stopping to look back. It was a morning that might have been a Monday, or a Tuesday, or any day on Mars. Biggs was on the canal rim, his feet hung down in the cool water, soaking, while he took the sun in his face.
Hey, what are you doing back here, Biggs? Didn't you go out with the search party?
Yeah. I come back. I got a blister.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What do you mean? Look. Look, Cherokee. See that? Well, anyway, I had enough searching. 4 days hunting for that screwball Spender.
Didn't find him yet, huh?
Oh, good riddance. Oh, my feet. I'm going to soak them in the canal. If I was Wilder, I wouldn't worry about that nut Spender. Let him go. He's a crackpot anyway.
Well, he's a little foggy upstairs, I guess. Hey, why don't you take your feet out of that canal, Biggs? I got to make coffee out of that water.
Coffee? You call that stuff coffee? I had a motorcycle once that dripped grease that tasted better than...
Hey, wait a minute, Biggs. Hey, look over there.
Where?
By that bush. There's someone there.
Hey.
It's him. Hey. Hey, Spender.
Spender?
He's coming over.
Why'd he stay lost, that crazy jerk?
Hi, Spender. Long time no see.
Hello, Cherokee. I've been exploring some ruins.
Oh, you and them ruins. You're like a dog in a boneyard. What's the matter? Why don't you just say something? Where you been?
Up in the hills. What would you say if I told you I found a Martian?
Oh, yeah?
Where?
Never mind. Let me ask you a question. How would you feel if you were a Martian and people came to your land and started to tear it up?
Well, I know how I'd feel. I've got Cherokee blood in me. My grandfather told me a lot of things about the way they kicked the Indians around in the Oklahoma Territory. If there's any Martian around, I'm all for him.
How about you, Biggs?
They're dead. They're all dead. It's a good thing, too.
Well, I found a Martian. Up in a dead town in the hills, I've been reading their books, and they're easy to understand, and I've learned their language. And then I found this Martian, and I brought him here, now.
I don't see no Martian.
I'm the last Martian.
What did you say?
Biggs, I'm going to kill you.
Oh, cut it out. What kind of a lousy joke is that? And I don't... Now, don't put that gun away. You're kidding, huh? All right, Spender, you're...
He's dead. You killed him.
You can come with me, Cherokee. You're an Indian. You know how the Martians would feel. You can be with me in this.
You killed him. You just killed him.
He deserved it.
You're crazy.
Maybe I am. But you can come with me.
Come with you for what? Go on, get out of here, you crazy murderer.
Of all of them, I thought you'd understand. I thought you'd remember what happened to your own people.
You get out of here, you crazy murdering...
Don't reach for that gun.
Spender. Spender.
Hathaway, break out the arms locker. Issue pistols, rifles, and grenades.
Yes, sir.
And you'd better get the Bible out of the navigation chest. We have to bury these two. Park, will you start digging a grave? Hmm?
How about Spender?
We'll have to go up in the hills and find him.
Just let me at him with my bare hands, a crazy murdering louse.
That's enough, Park. Your man is sick. He must be...
Sick, my eye! He's...
That's enough! Now grab a shovel and start digging.
Spender saw the thin dust rising in the valley, and he knew the pursuit was beginning. The sun burned farther up the sky, and the blue sand drifted lazily across the sea bottom below. He sat beside a quiet pool 10,000 years old and held a silver book. Through the house played the strange wind music of ancient Mars, and he heard voices whisper in his mind.
Earth, I hear you. I've always heard you. Even down there on Earth.
Run.
I won't run. What's the use?
Live, Earthman. Live.
What for? To see them tear down your temples and put up hot dog stands?
Run.
They've seen me now. They know I'm up here.
Live.
There's Wilder now. I've got him right in my sights.
Kill, Earthman.
Funny, he hasn't ordered them to use grenades. They could lob one right up here and blow me to bits. Yeah, maybe the captain thinks I'm too nice to be blown to bits. He wants my death to be clean. Just one bullet hole in me, nothing messy. And why? Because he understands me.
The only one in the crew who ever did.
Well, at least I can do the same for him. Just one bullet in his head, a nice, clean death. All I have to do is pull the trigger and then... It's no use. I can't do it to him.
Spender! Can you hear me, Spender?
I hear you, Captain. What do you want?
Talk. Truth.
All right. Come on up. Leave your gun down there. Keep your hands up.
Oh. That's quite a climb. You mind if I sit down? How long do you think you can hold out?
Until you're all dead.
Oh, why didn't you kill all of us this morning when you had the chance? You could have.
I know. I got sick. I started killing people. I realized they were just fools and I shouldn't be killing them, but it was too late. So I came up here where I could get angry again.
Why did you do it?
When I was a kid, my folks took me to visit Mexico City. I'll always remember the way my father acted, loud and big. And my mother didn't like the people because she thought they didn't wash enough. I can see my mother and my father coming to Mars and acting the same way. Anything that's strange is no good to us. We aren't fit to take over this planet.
But to kill two men.
How would you feel if a Martian spit on the White House floor?
You know, you haven't acted very civilized yourself today.
I'll kill you all off, Wilder. That'll delay the next rocket 5 years, and then I'll kill them, too. And if I'm lucky, I'll live to be 60. And I'll meet every expedition that lands on Mars. Oh, I'll be very friendly. I'll explain our rocket blew up one day. And then I'll kill them off. And I'll save Mars for half a century. And by then, maybe the Earth people will give up.
And yet you're outnumbered. We already have you surrounded. In an hour, you would be dead.
I found an underground passage that'll take me back in the hills, Wilder. I'll go back there. And then I'll pick you off one by one.
We'll see. Well, it's a nice town you've got here, Spender. It's beautiful. I'd like to live here.
You can. Join me. You're not like them. Why go back to them, Captain? I'll show you what a good life these people had.
No, there's too much Earth blood in me. I may even agree with you about all this, but that does not change what I must do.
You won't stay?
No. This is your last chance, Bender. Look, you're sick. Now come along with me quietly.
No. No. One last thing. If you win, do me a favor. Try to see that they don't tear this planet apart.
Right.
And if it helps, just think of me as a very crazy fellow who went berserk one summer day. It'd be easier on you that way.
I'll think that over. So long, Spender.
Bye, Captain. Good luck.
The men spread out again, walking and then running on the hot hillside places where there would be sudden cool grottos that smelled of moss and sudden open blasting places that smelled of sun or stone. The men ran and ducked and ran and squatted in the shadows.
I'll blow his brains!
Captain Wilder hugged the rock warmed by the sun. He gasped, for the air was thin and not meant for running. Spender lay at the top of a hill, and a gap in the rocks showed the white of his shirt against the shadows. Wilder looked at the towers of the little clean Martian village, like sharply carved chess pieces lying in the afternoon. He saw the rocks and the interval between where Spender's chest was revealed.
Go on, Spender. Get out. You only got a few seconds to escape. Go on, get out of the caves. Come back later. You go now. I've got to win this. I've got to think that I'm right. Pull this trigger. Go now. Get out.
I'll get him! A slug in the head, I'll blow his bloody brains!
No, Parkhill! Put down that gun. I'll do this myself. Spender. Why didn't you get out?
Why? Why?
Why?
They buried him in that ancient valley town, where the music of the wind played on through the days and the nights. They laid him in an ancient silver sarcophagus with waxes and wines which were 10,000 years old, his hands folded on his chest. The last they saw of him was his peaceful face in the cold silver light of the racing twin moons. The captain found the poem in Spender's pocket, and he read it before he shut the marble door.
So we'll go no more a-roving so late into the night. Though the heart be still as loving, and the moon be still as bright. Though the night was made for loving, and the day returns too soon, yet we'll go no more a-roving by the light of the moon.
The next afternoon, Parkhill did some target practice in one of the dead cities, shooting out the crystal windows and blowing the tops off the fragile towers. Captain Wilder caught Parkhill and nearly knocked his teeth out.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you the Ray Bradbury story, And the Moon Be Still as Bright, adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were John Larkin, Clark Gordon, Dick Hamilton, Nelson Olmsted, Lawrence Kerr, and Stan Early. Your narrator was Norman Rose. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Hey, Kristen, how's it tracking?
With Carvana Value Tracker?
What else?
Oh, it's tracking. In fact, Value Surge Alert, trucks up 2.5%. Vans down 1.7%.
Just as predicted.
Mm-hmm.
So, we gonna...
I don't know. Could sell, could hold.
The power to always know our car's worth.
Exhilarating, isn't it?
Tracking.
Always know your car's worth with Carvana Value Tracker.
From out of the future comes... Law of Space!
Nova City Space Station calling Captain Star. Nova City Space Station calling Captain Star. Report for special space mission.
And now for today's thrilling adventure in space with Captain Star. The Carmunian Return.
General Chickering, you wanted to see me, sir?
Oh, yes, Star. I'm glad you returned from your mission safely.
So am I, sir.
Star, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to give you another assignment immediately.
Yes, sir.
I've just received a communication from our agents on Neptune. Do you recall the Neptunian scientist, Carmunius?
Yes, I believe so, sir. One of the most brilliant scientific minds in the universe.
Precisely, Star. He's here in Nova City. He wants to see you.
That's impossible, sir.
Is it, Star? I have received a message from him.
General, you couldn't have. The Neptunian scientist Carmunius has been dead for 50 years. Stripes, Gil.
Hello.
Hey, Skipper. What's the matter? You look sort of funny.
I don't feel funny.
Well, what's wrong, Skipper? Did you see General Chickering over at Space Headquarters?
Yes, Gil, I saw him. We have another assignment.
Well, what kind of an assignment?
Carmunius.
Carmunius? You mean the scientist from Neptune who died about a half century ago?
Yeah, that's the one, all right.
What kind of an assignment could we have with a dead man, Skipper?
We'll know soon, Stripes. This dead man's going to pay us a visit.
Yeah. Ridiculous, isn't it?
Is it?
Well, sure. Look, when you go, you go. That's all. I mean, dead men don't go around visiting people.
This one does. He's already visit-waived General Chickering. I have the utmost confidence in Chickering. And he swears that the man he talked to was actually Carmunius. He's as baffled as we are.
Well, what does this Carmunius want with you, Skipper?
I don't know, Gail. Carmunius wouldn't tell General Chickering anything other than that I was to be located at once and wait here in my office.
You mean Carmunius wouldn't tell the General the purpose of his return or even give him an inkling?
Just one inkling, Stripes.
Well, what was that?
That the fate of the entire universe depends on my meeting with Carmunius. Alone. Yes.
Hey, Skipper, what's the matter?
Yes. Yes, I'll do it. I'll do exactly as you say.
Skipper, who are you talking to?
Stripes, you and Gail go back to the spaceport and prepare our ship for blasting. I'll join you later after I meet with Carmunius.
Well, why, Skipper? I mean, you act almost as if you've gotten orders to blast.
I have. Carmunius just gave them to me. Captain Starr. I am Comunius. You died 50 years ago.
Precisely.
Yet you're here now. You stand before me and you speak.
Precisely.
As I recall, you were lost in a spaceflight toward some unexplored moon.
Yes, Captain. My spaceship crashed on the Neptunian moon Argo. I was killed instantly.
Would you mind explaining then how you can walk around Nova City 50 years later in an apparent excellent state of health?
In due time, Captain, in due time. First, your orders. I see you have obeyed the one I sent you by hypnotic telepathy.
Yes, I... You got through to me, all right.
Good. That means our mental processes are well tuned. It will make your mission easier.
Mission?
Precisely, Captain. Mission. Your mission is to blast off for the moon Argo.
The moon Argo is off all charted space lanes, Comunius. It's a dangerous flight to make.
Not nearly so dangerous as not making it.
What do you mean?
I mean you will obey my orders without question, or you and the entire universe shall be destroyed.
I'm on number two scanner now, Jeff.
I'm picking up a slight signal from it.
We're getting the signal in here now.
Well, what is it?
It looks like an asteroid, yet it doesn't. It
must be the moon Argo.
It must? I mean, what must be what?
Gale, stand by to establish orbit for our ship.
You mean we're going to land?
Yes. Stripes, you'll stand by here with the blasters ready. If Gale and I aren't back in 30 minutes, start after us.
Argo is.
Yes, ma'am. About 200 degrees below zero. Our electro suits will keep us warm. Nothing but rock and desolation and loneliness. Comunius told me that beyond that rise over there is the lost spaceship he crashed in.
All right. Let's go have a look.
There, Gale. See?
Why, there actually is a wrecked spaceship down there. Then yeah. You'd had to talk to someone.
Yes, Gale. That's the ship Comunius crashed in 50 years ago.
You're back.
Yes, Stripes.
I was about to leave the ship and start looking for you. You know, I was getting worried. Hey, you both look half frozen.
Oh, we are, Stripes.
Well, here are a couple of caloric tablets. They help get your heat energy back.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, you know, you find anything?
You know, the lost Comunian spaceship bodies were all there.
Well, what about Comunius?
Wonder why he ought to disappear to Argo.
No, I don't get it. Well, on second thought, maybe I don't want to get it.
Oh, it scares me. Perhaps Comunius really isn't dead. Perhaps... Oh, I don't know. What is the answer?
That's something we probably can't find an answer to, Gale. Psychic phenomena, well, it isn't new. In fact, the ancient Earth people practiced it, experimented with it. There have been many cases in the past of people talking to the dead.
Yeah, but aren't most such cases fake?
Some undoubtedly are, of course. But many apparently aren't, Stripes. Well, we don't know. We can't explain some things that have happened.
Comunius was a brilliant man, wasn't he, Skipper?
Yes, Gale. One of the most brilliant in the universe.
Well, then, isn't it possible that during his studies and experiments, he did find a method to, well, to come back, to return from the dead?
With a mind as brilliant as Carmania's, anything is possible.
Well, what are we going to do now, Skipper?
Yes. Yes.
Skipper, that look on your face. Is it Communius?
Yes. Yes, I hear you. Yes, right away.
Skipper, where are you going?
I'll be back soon. Stripes?
Yes, sir?
Communicate with Scientific Space Investigation down in Nova City. Tell them that this is a blue emergency. Tell them I just received information that the entire universe is in deadly danger. Tell them to alert the populations of the major cities.
I wish I could, Skipper.
What in the universe do you mean, Stripes?
Our communicator's dead.
Carmunius! Carmunius, this is Captain Star. Where are you?
Right here, Star. Beside you.
But I didn't see you appear. Where did you come from?
Let's merely say my powers are rather mysterious, Captain.
Carmunius, are you really dead?
There are some who believe that death is a state of mind. There are some who believe that one cannot die until his work is completed.
Is that what you believe, Carmunius?
I have roamed the windswept reaches of this lonely moon for 50 years. For 50 years, I have walked these desolate moors with only time and space for companions, listening to the messages come in on the wind. And so it shall be for all eternity, because the goodness in man should never die.
Then you never really died, did you?
No, Star. I never really died.
You say that so strangely. What are your powers, Carmunius?
They deal with the mind and with matter. Someday all mankind will know such things, Star.
You speak of the universe being in deadly danger. What is the nature of this danger, Carmunius?
Did you communicate with Earth and warn them as I instructed you?
I couldn't. The communicator's dead. The wind is gone. Deathly quiet.
Then perhaps I am too late. Star, hurry. Get to your spaceship and blast off at once.
Where, Carmunius? Where?
For my old laboratory on top of Mount Orlo on the planet Neptune.
What's that?
A planet quake. Hurry, Star. What's happening here will happen to every planet in the universe unless you can stop them.
Skipper. Skipper, come on. We gotta get out of here. Hey, what are you doing here all alone?
Where's Carmunius?
There's no one here but you. What's the matter?
I don't know. Guess a falling rock smacked me.
Here, Gilma. Here. Let me help you. Gale's getting the rockets revved up. Come on. Come on. There's a ship.
Flight, hurry.
I'm trying to. Come on, Skipper.
Here, let me help you. What's happened to the Skipper?
He passed out. Here, get him inside. I'll go forward to the rocket control.
All right.
Oh, you better pray we can blast off this planet quick. All right, get him down there. Is he okay?
All right, Pipes.
All right.
Pick her up.
Ready? One, two, three, here it goes. Close one,
Stripes. Set course for Neptune.
Right, Skipper. How you feeling?
Still woozy. Where's Carmunius?
Take it easy, Skipper. There was no sign of Carmunius when Stripes found you.
I was talking to him, I tell you.
Yeah, sure you were, Skipper.
Well, hang it all, I was. No, let's forget it.
Oh, that's a good idea. You rest a while, Skipper.
Head for Mount Orlo on Neptune.
Orlo? But why there?
I don't know. Is the communicator working yet?
No, sure. I just tried it.
I'm going after the bunkhouse and lie down a while. Stripes, keep those rockets wide open for Neptune. If we don't make it soon, we'll be too late. Arminius?
Yes, Captain. Shut the door, please. I've been waiting for you.
How did you get in here?
How did I get down to Earth to contact you?
Oh, I don't know.
More of my strange powers, Captain. It would take a lifetime to explain.
Arminius, I'm afraid I don't follow you. In fact, I don't even really know why I'm here.
That's precisely why I selected you for this mission. Because you're intelligent enough not to ask too many questions. You merely believe, and you obey without understanding.
Yes, but I don't know why.
No, you don't know why. But you do know that I'm not evil.
Yes, I do know that. Why are we heading for Mount Orlo, Arminius?
There is an evil man there, Star. He possesses a formula for cosmic destruction based upon a machine I spent a lifetime constructing. He caused the planet quake on the moon Argo. With this new power, he can destroy the universe.
How can I stop this man?
I have here a key, Star. It is a key made out of a combination of gold, iridium, and tantalum metals. It is the key to my cosmic machine, Star. When it makes contact with my machine, it will neutralize the machine's power and make it useless.
You mean you took this key with you when you blasted off 50 years ago from the moon Argo?
Yes, Star. I made a mistake then. I turned on the machine with this key. I trusted the man I left in charge. Unfortunately, I crashed. It was only recently I learned of this man's intention to destroy the universe with my machine. That is why I returned to contact you.
What do you want me to do, Arminius?
You will take this key, Star. You will go to my laboratory on Mount Orlo, and you will destroy my cosmic machine.
All right.
You will also destroy the man who is there.
Who is this man?
He will appear to you very similar to the way I look to you now. When I last saw him, he was very young. But as he grew older, he also grew evil. My assistants trained him in my knowledge. He is my responsibility to the universe, Star, and he must be destroyed.
Who is he, Arminius?
He is my son.
Cut rocket stripes.
Right, Skipper. Well, there's Mount Orlo, right below us.
Yeah, that building on top must be the laboratory.
Oh, Skipper, are you sure you know what we're doing? After all, we haven't cleared this with Neptunian authorities. The Neptune government's liable to make a protest to Earth.
It's a chance we'll have to take, Gale. Set her down, Stripes.
Warned me of your approach. What do you want?
It's uncanny, the resemblance. You are the son of Arminius?
I am his son.
We wish to see your laboratory and your cosmic machine.
Why? By what right do you invade my privacy?
We were on the moon Argo this morning. There was a planet quake there caused by some cosmic activity. We traced the cosmic beams here to this spot.
Then the planet quake was successful.
Quite successful.
Good. You have saved me a space trip to check on the results.
You are a brilliant man. More brilliant than even your father.
Yes, and I will do more with my brilliance than my father did with his.
We should like very much to see your laboratory.
Why?
Oh, we're interested in scientific experiments of all types. And we were amazed at the results of your experiments on Argo. You're a very brilliant man.
Thank you. Come in. Here is my laboratory.
Why, it's amazing.
It is the most complete laboratory in the universe. And over there is the machine that caused the destruction on Argo.
Hey, look, Skipper. Dynamos, electronic gadgets, and dials and gauges.
Right, Stripes. And in the center, place for the key. Cover him, Stripes, while I go to the machine.
Okay, friend, just stand still or use this blaster.
What is the meaning of this? You, what are you doing over there at my machine?
Guard! Guard! Okay, Stripes, I turned the machine off for the key. Come on, Taylor, get out of here.
Here come the guard, Skipper.
Then use your blaster.
Let's go.
Quake here on Argo.
Yes, Gail. You communicated with Earth, Stripes?
The communicator worked fine after we destroyed that laboratory.
Yes, I thought it would.
Skipper, I don't understand this mission at all. Do you think you actually talked to Comunius? A man who has been dead for 50 years?
I don't know, Gail. Maybe I dreamed it. People do have such dreams, you know. In any event, it got results.
Well, I've heard of such things, but I never knew they happened.
Neither did I. In this case, let's just report it that we accomplished the mission with the help of a source or sources unknown, shall we?
Okay, Skipper.
Skipper, why did you insist we stop back here on the moon Argo before going home?
I don't know, Gail. Maybe another dream.
Well, there's the wreck of Comunius' spaceship. Why, it's practically covered over with dirt and rocks. Since the planet quake.
Just like a grave, isn't it? Or a monument, perhaps.
Hey, Skipper.
Yeah?
Hey, look. Over there.
Yes. Along the horizon. A figure. Walking across the moor. All alone.
You don't seem surprised, Skipper. Hey, you waved to him. And he waved back.
Did I, Stripes?
Well done, Captain Star.
Thank you, Comunius.
Hey, Skipper, am I dreaming or did I hear that guy say something?
Maybe you were dreaming, Stripes. Maybe we all are.
I have roamed the windswept reaches of this lonely moon for 50 years. For 50 years I have walked these desolate moors with only time and space for companions. And so it shall be for all eternity, because the goodness in man should never die.
You're right, Comunius. The goodness in man shall never die.
Space is created and written by Tom Hubbard and Fred Eggers, directed and produced by Al Gannaway for Bill Broidy Productions.
That's all for today, boys and girls. Be sure and join us next week for another Saturday morning adventure. Thank you.
Space Astrator. Won't you come with me beyond this world?
Beyond this world, dramatic stories of tomorrow and maybe of today, as told in science fiction. Stories of adventure in time and space, of exciting experiments in science beyond this world. Your guide, the noted authority on science fiction, Astrator.
Welcome beyond this world. Tonight I will take you beyond the realm of knowledge as you know it today, to the boundaries of outer space, and to the story of a rocket pilot who undergoes a strange and frightening experience. First in 1910, then again in 1949 and 50, many claim to have witnessed strange shapes in the sky. Who is there to say that flying saucers are not spaceships from another planet? With our star, Frank Lovejoy, come with me now to a great air base in the desert for an adventure beyond this world with the famous author Graham Dorr and his thrilling tale, The Outer Limit.
Okay, Colonel.
Yes, sir.
All of you will want to know why we took you out of whatever warm bed you were in. You got a reason. The RJX-1.
Yeah, that's right. The RJX-1. The top secret experimental rocket jet aircraft. We've been babying it, nursing it, staying up nights with it for 16 months now. This morning, Major Westfall is going to wean it. Bill is going to take her out and beat her up to death. I can't impress upon you men how extraordinary this flight is. It's an eight-rocket ship. That's what I said, eight rockets. Eight rockets designed to take man into areas of space that have never been explored before. And at a rate of speed to which no pilot has yet been subjected. Some of you men have already flown many times the speed of sound, so I don't have to tell you very much. Joe?
Yes, Colonel?
You'll lead the F-86s. You and the other three jet boys will be Bill's chase planes. We want observation at 35,000 feet.
Yes, sir.
Okay, here's how it plays. Pull the curtains on the map, will you, Sergeant?
Yes, sir.
You see it circled here, your rendezvous point. We designate it Point X. It's roughly over Boulder Dam. 0 hour is 0900. Joe, you and your jets will take off at 0-15. You got that?
Yes, sir.
You F-86s will make conventional climbs to 30,000 feet. Rendezvous at Point X and call in to meet control at 35,000 feet. Right, Joe?
That cuts it, Colonel.
Oh, no, wait a minute. Not quite. Now we hear about the weather. Pete?
Yes, Colonel. Well, the weather's very pretty out, boys. All clear, ceiling unlimited. Winds aloft at 10,000, 80 mph, 25,000, 140 mph, 40,000, 150 mph. Estimated temperature, 45 below at 40,000 feet. There's some scattered clouds northwest of Point X at 15,000 feet. Stratus at 30,000 feet, 30 miles east of Point X, east. We expect no change for 3 hours. That's it, sir.
Okay, Pete. Joe, you and your boys go unwrap your F-86s. Have a nice time.
Yes, sir. Come on, boys.
Major Westfall. Major Westfall, stick around. I want to talk to you.
Okay, Hank.
How you feeling, Bill?
Why? You worried, Hank? Don't worry.
Look, Bill, you've got only 10 minutes of rocket fuel. Get rid of those jets before you fire the rockets. Fire only one rocket
at a time.
Yeah, that's right. Now, look, I'll be listening in on the public address of control. I won't bother you until you're airborne. It'll be between you and the tower until then.
All right, don't worry, Hank. I'm going to fly that baby higher and faster than anybody ever did before, just like you said. I'm going to take it up and I'm going to bring it back. And then you and I'll have dinner together,
Zero minus.
Good morning, Colonel.
Mr. Hargrove. You'll be here at the control with me?
It's all right with you, Colonel.
I wouldn't have it any other way. You've checked the communications equipment, Sergeant?
Yes, sir. Major Westfall has been assigned a special radio frequency at 3970.
Good. You'll take care of it, Sergeant. We don't want it to poop out or anything like that, do we?
Yes, sir. No, sir.
Hargrove, I got a thing on my mind. That boy in the plane you geniuses designed, he's my best boy.
It's our best plane, Colonel.
It better be. Now it's your turn. What do you got in your mind?
Everything's in proper order, Colonel. Recording equipment, the television cameras in the cockpit, everything. Every known scientific device, even some unknown. They've been very...
You're talking about a man, Hargrove. That's all I really want to get back out of this. What about the man?
There may be one difficulty.
Tell me about it. I'd like to know.
The takeoff, with all that load. The jets, the rockets, all at maximum fuel capacity. Never been tested that way before.
Go on, Mr. Hargrove.
Well, it's just that Major Westfall has only 6,000 feet to get his ship airborne. If he accelerates from 0 to 160 miles per hour in 6,000 feet, he should be airborne in 7 seconds.
7 seconds, that makes 0 plus G.
Yes, Colonel. Beyond 0 plus G... Well, beyond that, we don't know. We just don't know.
Thanks. Thanks for everything, Mr. Hargrove. Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Flip your switch on Major Westfall. I hear he's got a swell program. Flip them all, will you, Sergeant?
Yes, sir.
RJX-1 to tower. Any change in weather?
Tower to RJX-1. Barometer reading 29.7. Set your altimeter accordingly.
Roger.
Wind 15 miles from south. Take off runway 27. Runway 27.
Got it.
0-130.
RJX-1 to control. Over.
Control to RJX-1. Go ahead.
This is just for you, Hank. Cabin pressure okay. Oxygen pressure okay.
All right. Get off the dime, kid.
Take a pill, Hank. You'll need it to settle your stomach.
0-1.
RJX-1 to crew chief. Over.
Crew chief to RJX-1. Go ahead.
I'm ready to fire.
Hold it. Okay. All set to fire.
Clear?
Clear.
Starting right, Jet. Starting left, Jet.
0-30 seconds.
Tower to RJX-1. 0-30 seconds. RJX-1 to tower. Go ahead.
Western Airlines convair reported over Ventura.
Got it.
Eastbound Constellation at 17,000 over Salt Lake.
Roger.
Western Airlines DC-4 on Base Lake at 1,000 over Burbank. The rest of the air is yours.
Thank you so much.
0-10.
RJX-1 to tower. Ready for takeoff.
Tower to RJX-1.
Six,
clear for takeoff.
Five.
Good luck, Bill.
4-3-2-1-0.
He's rolling.
Five.
Rolling.
B-C-D-E.
Bill, lift it.
D,
lift it. A. Lift it.
RJX-1 to control. RJX-1 to control. Come in.
Control to RJX-1. Go ahead.
Everything's great, Hank. It's a doll, baby.
Hey, you must have been kidding with that takeoff, weren't you?
It took that long to get off. That makes it a takeoff.
How fast are you climbing, kid?
1,700 a minute airspeed, 550.
We tracked your landing gear. It'll help.
Oh, sorry.
Call me at 20,000.
Heading is 87. Everything is real good. Come in, Hank.
How do you feel?
I like it here.
Pressure okay?
Okay.
F-86 leader to control. F-86 to control. Come in.
Control to F-86 leader. Go ahead.
F-86 observing RJX-1. He's really tearing, Colonel. Over point X at 35,000.
On schedule, Joe?
On schedule.
RJX-1 to control. RJX-1 to control. Come in.
Control to RJX-1. Go ahead, Bill.
40,000 feet, Hank.
Still a doubt, baby?
Still is. Ready to pressurize. Can you hear me okay, Hank?
Coming in fine.
Pressurized. Ready to prime rocket system in 5 seconds. Primed. Dropping right jet. Dropping left jet. All clear.
Good luck, Bill.
Firing number one rocket. Fired. Oh! Taken back. Firing number two rocket. Fired. Hey, honey!
Okay, Bill, what is it? Bill!
Bill, are you receiving me? Control to RJX-1. Come in. Come in, RJX-1. Hello, Bill. Come in. Control to F-86 leader. Control to F-86 leader. Come in.
F-86 leader to control. Go ahead.
What about it, Joe?
F-86 observing RJX-1. RJX-1 at approximately 60,000 feet. Maintaining a heading of north-northwest. I can barely make him, Colonel.
Try calling.
Okay. F-86 leader to RJX-1. F-86 to RJX-1. Come in. Come in, RJX-1. Come in.
Mr. Hargrove.
F-86 to RJX-1.
Share it with me, Mr. Hargrove.
F-86 to
RJX-1. Sit here
RJX-1.
And run your fingers
come
through
in.
Your hair and
come in, RJX-1.
Wait and think about it and share it with me.
F-86 to RJX-1. F-86 leader to control. F-86 leader to control. Come in.
Go ahead, F-86 leader.
We've lost him, Colonel.
Stay up there, Joe, for as long as you can.
What do we do now, Colonel?
I just told you, Mr. Hargrove. We wait. You and me, we wait.
We've lost him, Colonel.
You haven't lost me. I can hear you, Joe.
Stay up there, Joe, for as long as you can.
Hello? 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 I'll try another frequency, Joe. RJX-1 to F-86. Can you make me? RJX-1 to F-86. Come in. Come in. No good, huh? I'll switch back to Channel Charlie. I still can't get you, Joe. I'll keep sending. Firing number 8 rocket. Fired. Oh, brother! Oh, brother! RJX-1 to all you ships at sea, to all you people anywhere. This is Bill Westfall approaching 210,000 feet. That's 40 miles straight up in the air, all you people, and that's where I am. You never saw anything like it. No clouds. A color no one ever named before. And silence. 8 rockets roaring at my tail and I can't hear them. Their sound will never reach me at 1,800 miles an hour. Silence so complete that the ticking of the clock on my instrument panel is a hammer in my brain. Silence. Otherwise, nothing. Nothing except... No, nothing at all. Wait a minute. Yes, there is something all right at 2 o'clock high. Oh, that's really something, brother. Maybe a flying disc, and this is a big one. Spinning like a top, and it's coming toward me. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Listen. Something has just happened. Something, a missile, a shot, maybe, through the canopy. My pressure is going down. Something is happening to me. This thing, it's like a magnet. I'm being pulled toward it. I've lost control of my ship. I've no control. I'm going through decompression. I'm on the verge of unconsciousness. I'm blacking out. I'm flat. Can you hear?
Ends Act One. This is Astrator once again. Today's most modern rocket ship, plunging higher above the Earth than man has ever reached before, with fuel running low, in contact with, perhaps, a flying saucer. Come back with me now to Act Two of Beyond This World, as we return to the Great Desert Air Base and the second part of tonight's story, The Outer Limit.
He had only 10 minutes fuel. He's 3 hours overdue.
Well, that's that, Colonel.
But wait some more, Mr. Hargrove.
There's no point to it. May I make a suggestion, Colonel?
What?
Give it up. Make your report to Washington.
What about you, Mr. Hargrove?
To be frank with you, Colonel, in another 16 months, there'll be another plane. The RJX-2. And the Army will give us another man to fly it.
Not till we're certain about this man, and we're not certain.
What do you propose to do?
The things that are in the manual. We'll organize search parties and put spotter planes up in the air. Maybe Bill came down on the ocean. We'll call the Navy in.
Colonel, if the RJX-1 came down on the ocean, it would sink in 3 minutes. You know it had no life preserver equipment on it. The added weight of
the... We'll call the Navy in.
Whatever you say, Colonel. My guess is...
What's your guess, Mr. Hargrove?
My guess is that sometime, somewhere, on some beach or in some field, someone will pick up a piece of torn metal. That someone will be holding what's left of the RJX-1.
Can you understand me? But there is no manifestation that we're in communication with you, sir. Yes, sir. I am Zeglon. You're aboard the space patrol ship S2J3. Am I in communication with you?
Can you understand me? Are we in contact? Can you understand now what I am saying to you?
Yes. Yes, I can understand you.
Earthman. Your brain is in turmoil, is it not? It has great difficulty in accepting what you see.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
Accept it. What you see here exists.
All this? This exists?
It exists, Earthman. The spaceship you're on exists. Those jet dynamos you see before you exist. Jet dynamos driven by the harnessed power of 1,000 suns. Listen, Earthman. Listen to them. Do you know what happened as you listened, Earthman? We have flung ourselves 10,000 miles into space. What do you say to that, Earthman?
Why... I don't know what to say.
It's beyond the conception of your Earth brain. Then conceive this. Try to move, Earthman. You're not bound in any way. Try to move. Don't strain. It's impossible for you to move. There's a screen of force aimed at you. Now it's turned off. You may move about, Earthman. Proceed, Zeglon.
Yes, Commander. Earthman, I perceive that your intellect now accepts the fact. You are aboard Space Patrol Ship S2J3. I am Captain Zeglon of the Galactic Guard.
Galactic? Galactic Guard?
The Guardian of the Galaxy. The Guardian of the Universes. The instrument the Brotherhood of Worlds has set up in defense against such a civilization as yours. What puzzles you, Earthman?
Well, I can't see you. I can feel that you're here, but I can't see you.
There is no necessity for you to see us. It is sufficient that we communicate with each other.
Yes, but talking to you is... Well, it's not like talking. It's as if it were all happening inside my brain.
It is. That is how I'm reaching you, by telepathy. Do you remember what happened to you before you blacked out?
Yes, I think so. There was a sharp sound, like a bullet hitting the canopy.
It was not a bullet. It was a ray. It was necessary to stop your flight. We have so much to tell you.
Well, first tell me about my ship. Is it lost?
No. It is such a crude little ship.
Crude?
Easy for us to repair. It will be returned to you. And you will return to Earth. Because you are the Earth's only hope of survival.
Hope of survival? What do you mean?
I will show you. What you see on this screen before you is a panorama of your own universe, far greater in scope than an Earthman has ever seen before. Observe. Observe where the line is pointing. Planet 3, Star 5, Galaxy C, Sector K.
Is that the Earth?
No. That dot, that speck you see revolving in the vastness, is your sun. A star whose surface is 12,000 times that of your Earth. Your Earth is not even visible here.
What? How did you know we even existed?
That was our problem. We first became aware of your planet when we found atomic dust in the upper atmosphere. We traced it to your Earth.
It was that important to you?
Quite. We determined that you were setting off atomic bombs. That's why the Galactic Council has quarantined you.
Quarantined? I don't understand. How? How are we quarantined?
We have sealed off your planet from the rest of space.
But
we have surrounded it with a force screen. When that screen has accumulated enough particles of atomic dust, your Earth will explode. Your civilization, you, all life will disappear forever.
Listen to me, Earthman. Listen. We've had our own wars. Wars that almost destroyed our civilization. But we have finally outlawed war throughout space, including Earth. Now listen carefully, Earthman. If you continue to make atom bombs and hydrogen bombs, each many times more powerful than the last, and if you start making war with them, exploding them, it would upset the balance of the entire universe, throw all space into chaos. This, of course, we cannot allow. And the force screen with which we have surrounded the Earth will prevent it by exploding the Earth itself. Remember then, Earthman, if you start an atomic war, the Earth will at once be completely destroyed. Warn them, Earthman. Release them, Zegon.
Yes, Commander. Earthman, you will rise from your seat and open that door. Descend those stairs, Earthman. You will now enter the chamber to your left. There's your ship. Get into it, Earthman. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
While we were communicating, the patrol ship has returned to where we picked you up. And now you will be propelled toward Earth. Close your canopy. Open aperture.
Warn them, Earthman. Warn them.
Fire!
RJX-1 to tower. RJX-1 to tower. Come in. RJX-1 to tower. Come in, tower.
Tower to Quantum Man. You loaded, kid? How did you get in on this frequency?
Listen, this is RJX-1. RJX-1 coming in for landing. Give me landing instructions.
Tower to Funny Man. Impossible that you're RJX-1. He's 10 hours overdue. Get away from the area. Area cleared for bomber practice approaches.
This is Major Westfall and RJX-1. Come on, kid. Give me landing instructions. I have no fuel. I'm gliding.
What? Hey! Hey, yeah, I see you now, Major. Wait a minute. I'll restrict the area. Okay, RJX-1. Go ahead.
Approximately 6 miles north of field. Clear area for 10 miles.
Being cleared. What's your altitude?
10,000. Estimate 6 minutes to land.
Tower to RJX-1.
You are cleared to land. Runway 9. Wind east, southeast 15.
Roger, coming down. Hi, Hank.
Bill, what happened?
Hank, you won't believe it, but you've got to. I know you won't believe it. It'll knock you over.
Now, just take it easy, Bill.
Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Have the ship gone over by Geiger counters for radioactivity and seal it.
What?
Oh, yes, Hank. You better mount a 24-hour guard on it.
Look, what did you run into?
Plenty. Listen to me, Hank. They said the Earth would explode. They said it was the end for it.
They said that? Come on, let's go over to my office.
You gotta believe me.
Read it like an order, Bill. My office. I want Major Donaldson to look at you.
The psychiatrist? Hank, you've got to listen to me.
Come on over to the office.
Well, that's the story, Major Donaldson.
I see.
Well, Hank, you believe it, don't you?
Well, Major, what do you think?
I'm not sure. Bill, these men from Mars...
I didn't say they were from Mars. Do you hear me say anything about men from Mars?
No, you didn't.
All I'm trying to tell you is this. Whoever those people were, they knew all about us, everything. And they warned me. Our atomic bombs are a danger to the universe. One more and we're going to be the juiciest galactic 4th of July of all time. Explode, finish, gone. Like that. How do you like it?
All right, Bill, roll up your sleeve.
Oh, now, forget it, Major. All I need is a couple of drinks.
Sorry, Boyle, sorry. Not right now. Let the Major give you a hypo.
Now, look, I got a drink coming, a lot of drinks.
Later.
Come on, Bill, the sleeve.
You heard him, Bill.
All right, yes, all right, if it's an order. Go ahead.
There. You'll be okay in a few hours.
I'm okay now.
Sure. We'll leave you here, Bill. It's all right if Phil sleeps in here, isn't it, Colonel?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, maybe you'll believe me tomorrow. You'd better.
Come on, Major. He'll be okay by himself, Major?
He's been under a strain, but he'll sleep a long time. You better explain it to his wife somehow. I'll talk to him tomorrow. Tough. I've heard he's one of the best.
He's the best. A combination of nerve and loyalty and lightning reflexes that comes once in 10 million times. What about it, Major? How does Bill look to you?
I can't tell yet. Maybe a week, 6 months, 6 years. I'll need a whole lot of time with him before I can tell.
I see. Well, he'd better get some sleep, too.
All right. And don't worry, Colonel. He's a strong boy. Best nerves I've seen. I'd say things will be all right. Delusions like Bill's latched on to... Well, delusions like this...
Major.
Yes, Colonel?
Major, when you make your charts for Bill, diagnose him and treat him and do all the things you have to, when you do that, Major, consider this.
Yes?
How did he keep that plane in the air for 10 hours? For 10 hours, Major, when he had fuel to last him only 10 minutes.
So ends The Outer Limit. Tonight's story, Beyond This World. This is Astrotar again. Our thanks to Frank Lovejoy for his excellent performance as the test pilot, and to all the other members of our cast for so graphically bringing to life this most unusual story. Perhaps it's fantastic to conceive of flying saucers as patrol ships from another planet, as our author Graham Dorr has done tonight. Perhaps. But what would you say they were? This story could happen. And maybe it did happen. Don't be too sure. Perhaps flying saucers really do exist and are spaceships from beyond this world. Next week, an adventure into the future that you will not want to miss. Our version of the current best-selling novel by Jack Robinson, The Humanoids, when incredible robots from the outer universe invade the Earth. So, join us then, won't you? Beyond This World.
After the brutal war of 2204, in which the superpowers of Earth stopped just short of annihilating each other, an uneasy peace settled over what was left of civilization. During the next 50 years, governments of the United Peoples of Earth struggled to rebuild. Prosperity was just beginning to return.
That's it, honey. Let out the string. The wind will do the work for you.
Look at my kite, Daddy. It looks so pretty. Wish I could fly above the trees.
Wild and free.
Daddy, what's happening to the sunshine? Daddy, I'm scared.
The whole of the planet Earth grows dark, darkened by the shadow of thousands of unidentified warships. Suddenly and mysteriously multiplying in the heavens, like a massive plague of locusts.
Where did they come from? Who are they?
We are Dominion. In the name of the leader and his Council of the Seven, we claim Earth and its galaxy for our own. Escape is impossible. Resistance useless. Your weapons can do us no harm. Surrender, and you will not be killed.
Military reaction is immediate.
10, 9.
Deadly missiles from all nations are launched to seek and destroy this unidentified threat.
2, 1.
Your feeble attempts are noted. You were warned. Now you will feel the power of Dominion.
The missiles, Earth's last desperate hope, zero in on the Dominion warships. But before they can reach their target, the missiles smash into an invisible energy force field spread out across space.
Peoples of Earth, hear me. If you continue to resist, there will be pain and death.
All resistance ended. The governments of the United Peoples of Earth surrendered to the dark reign of the Dominion.
The game begins.
Dominion. Origin, unknown. Power, awesome. Its rule, evil and cruel. Dominion conquered Earth in one brutal master strike, destroying all freedom and justice. Mankind descended into slavery. But Dominion is not invincible. There is a major flaw in its plan. A secret that can be used to destroy it. But can the secret be found in time? This is the story of that search and the rebels who lead it. This is the secret of Dominion.
The year is now 2294. For over 35 years, the Dominion has prospered. Where freedom once flourished, the Dominion now rules. A continual state of war exists, and Dominion warships, heavy with arms, patrol interstellar space. No quarter is asked, none is given. Inside the lead fighter of a Dominion squadron, Colonel Stephen Richards notices one of his pilots drifting off course.
Richards to Protogen 6. Watch your vectors, Lipton.
Sorry, Colonel. Ignition activators are malfunctioning.
Try to hang on, Lipton.
Yes, sir.
I'll try, sir.
Colonel Richards, we're coming up on the rebel planet, Cygnus 3.
It's on my scanners, Major Connors.
Closing on Cygnus 3 at 300 kilometers.
Hold it. Lieutenant Lipton, you're out of formation again.
Sorry, sir. Can't seem to hold course. Warning lights. Antimatter fuel leaking into the prime chambers. Request permission to break off and return to base.
Permission granted. But tell maintenance I want some answers when I get back.
Yes, sir. Lipton out.
General Derek doesn't approve of your attitude toward maintenance, Colonel.
Connors, my men put their lives on the line every day.
I mention this problem for your own good, Richards. A word to the wise.
Stow it, Connors. You're just a humanoid. Your threats don't impress me. Dominion Corps Command expects us to conquer new worlds with fighters one bolt away from the scrap heap.
Your words are close to treason, Richards.
This isn't the time or the place for this discussion.
I merely follow my programming.
All right, gentlemen. Time to go to work. 200 kilometers. Insert disk 7 into your trigger pulse systems. Geoscanners show 20 seconds to assault run. Arm your Mison cannons. We're entering Cygnus 3's atmosphere. Full power to modulators. 10 seconds. Mark.
Colonel Richards, scanners indicate a rare target of opportunity. A rebel hospital. An excellent chance to increase our kill ratio.
Forget it, Connors. I won't be a part of that, and you know it. All units, stay with your Cygnus 3 assault plan. You've got a bloodlust, Connors. Commence firing on my command. 3, 2, 1, fire!
Sir, they aren't sending up any fighters.
Caught them completely by surprise, McGee. Most of their fighters are burning below us. Stay in assault mode. We'll take out their control.
Incoming enemy fire. 2 o'clock.
That was close. McGee! Your approach is too low.
Can't control it, Colonel. Power level reading shows activation is stopped.
Switch your energy flow to alternate.
I'm trying. Negative. My circuits are burned out.
McGee, go to reverse thrust. Blast your way out of the dive. You've got to slow down.
It's no use. Jumping like crazy. Buffeting. Starting to break up. I can't get...
Break off. Break off the attack. Get out of range. Assemble in Sector 9017. Kick in hyperspace. Now! Connors, how many fighters did we lose this time?
3, Colonel. 1 to enemy fire. 2 to malfunctions.
If we're going to die in combat, I'd like to think we had protojets that at least gave us a chance. Let's get back to base. Your beloved General Derek and I are going to have a very distasteful discussion.
Colonel Richards, come in. Sit down.
I prefer to stand while I say what needs to be said.
And just what needs to be said?
General Derek, over the past month, 15 of my men died simply because their protojets were unfit for battle. Because your technicians failed to do a proper job of maintenance.
Lower your voice in this room, Colonel. You are not in a debating chamber. You are in my office, and you will behave accordingly.
My men are my only concern.
Colonel Richards, I wouldn't risk a court-martial over this. Now you listen to me. I can guarantee you new protojets by the end of the month.
Your guarantee comes a bit too late for men like McGee.
Who?
McGee! He died today while you sat there behind your desk.
Be very careful, Richards. Don't go too far.
I don't believe we have anything else to say to each other, General. If you don't mind, I've got to check on repairs.
You do that. Good day, Colonel Richards.
Good day, General.
You can come out now, Connors.
Giving orders not to be disturbed, General Derek and her humanoid begin a curious ritual.
Go into recept mode, Major.
Receptors operational.
Access file TX-10.
TX-10, open. General Derek's eyes only. File title, evidence against Stephen Richards.
Is the file up to date?
Completely, General. All mission observations, all conversations in this room, including the one that just took place. There's damaging evidence against Richards.
Good. I want him out of my way, Connors. I've never trusted him. His background. I've told you he's not one of us, haven't I?
It's in the file, General.
He's a threat to my absolute authority in this sector. I won't have it.
I've heard him threaten you, question your orders, and now the maintenance demands...
Yes, but to bring him before the Council of the Seven, insubordination won't be enough. The file must prove Richards is a traitor.
Perhaps the hospital reference in today's mission report will be helpful.
Hospital? What are you talking about, Major?
An unprotected rebel hospital came up on the scanners during the assault run. Richards refused to destroy it. Acting against my direct recommendations, he gave orders to bypass it. It's all in the file.
Any loyal Dominion officer would never hesitate to wipe out a rebel target. Good, Major. Very good. One more nail in his coffin. Seal the file.
TX-10, sealed. Further instructions?
Watch him, Connors. Continue the file. One day soon, Richards will make a mistake, and then I'll have him where I want him. Watch closely, dear one.
I will, General. You can count on it.
On board the Dominion command ship, Colonel Richards is on his way to inspect his squadron's protojets when a stranger beckons to him from the shadows of the maintenance bay.
Colonel Richards, over here.
Who is it? What do you want?
My name is Carl Phillips, and we need to talk. It's important to both of us.
Well, come out from behind that blast guard if you want to talk.
I can't be seen with you, Colonel. There's no time to explain. Just look at this image, please.
What? It's my father and...
And me. Over 35 years ago.
You knew my father. The people who raised me told me he was a hero.
He was a hero, but on the rebel side. I know. I was there.
That can't be true. You're crazy.
Your parents were a brilliant scientific team. They developed the plasmonic diversity drive, the basis for the first rebel fighters.
My parents? Rebels?
Listen to me. I'm risking my life to convince you that you're fighting on the wrong side.
What happened to my parents?
When the Dominion overran the main rebel base, I got away. But your parents were captured and killed.
How do you know all this?
I can't tell you that. But proof is on the star system Canis Minor.
That star system went supernova over 2 years ago. Every planet was burned to a crisp.
The ice moon Centigor survived. But it could only last a few more days before the power of a black hole pulls it in.
Centiga? It's nothing but ice.
Go there. In the research lab, under the floor, you'll find a holographic recorder. It contains a message for you from your parents. It's important.
An incredible story if true, but you could be a fantastic liar.
I'm not lying, Richards. You haven't much time.
Phillips, I'm going to stick you in the base stockade on some trumped-up charge.
But listen,
and then I'm going to the Ice Moon Centiga. If I find out this story of yours is a lie, you'll pay for that lie with your life.
Deep inside the Dominion command ship, General Derek enters the cold metal interior of the interrogation room.
Connors, why did you bring me down here? And who is this?
This piece of human garbage was in the stockade. I thought we could conduct his interrogation more discreetly down here.
Ah, he has useful information for us.
I'm sure of it. He is not what he pretends to be.
Speak plainly, Connors. I have no time for humanoid riddles.
The traitor Richards left a few hours ago, General. Destination unknown. He put Phillips here in the base stockade, charging him with striking an officer, a Lieutenant Green.
I still don't see your point, Connors.
Richards lied. Lieutenant Green is no longer on this base.
How do you know that?
I couldn't resist running the name through my memory banks. Green died in space a week ago.
Well, well. Perhaps Richards has made his mistake, my pet. Release the restraint on the prisoner. Now, Phillips, what do you have to say?
I refuse to speak.
Don't worry. He'll tell us everything he knows after I give him this.
What is it?
20 milligrams of phenoparaglycide.
Phenoparaglycide? Why, that's...
That's the truth, Brooke. I'm going to do a complete mind probe.
But you'll rip his brain apart. Is that necessary?
Yes. But before he dies, General, he'll tell us about Richard's unauthorized little trip.
This is your last chance, Phillips. Tell us what Richards is doing. Tell us.
You won't use the truth, drug. It was outlawed years ago.
You're wrong, Phillips. You're hiding something. And I mean to know what it is. Connors, give him the injection.
No! No!
Quiet. Hold still.
Now, Phillips, let's hear your secrets. All of them.
9 hours have passed. Richards is deep in space. Suddenly...
There it is, the ice moon Centiga. And the black hole is pulling it in. I must be crazy coming here. Wait, what's that? A building jammed into an ice wall. Power hover. Could be the base station. Maybe, just maybe, Phillips was telling the truth. Atmosphere probe extended and on green. The air's breathable. Now this must have been the research lab. Space observation equipment over there. Old trophon tubes. Phillips said the recording device was under the floor. There it is. Now, how do you operate?
This recording is for my son, Stephen Richards. 3 second delay until the start of message. Son, your mother and I are about to try and rescue you.
One of our friends, Carl Phillips, has already escaped. He will find you, Stephen. Trust him.
We have uncovered a secret while working on Emerald Tree. The secret of the Dominion. If we fail in our mission to rescue you, you must know it.
Hurry, Robert. They're coming for us. Tell him about Emerald Tree.
There's no time. We're done for.
No, not yet. Stephen, the secret is in the Emerald Tree. To destroy Dominion, first you must destroy the...
They're gone. The floor. It's cracking. Got to get off this piece of ice. The black hole is pulling it in. There. Set for blast off. Come on. Hold together. Black hole is pulling me in. Got to break free. Hyperspace. The ice moon. It just disappeared. What were my parents trying to tell me? Secret of Dominion? In an emerald tree? Communications link on flasher. Should I answer? Of course, no one knows where I've been. Colonel Richards, awaiting message.
The message is from me, Richards. I'm right behind you.
Connors, Derek's henchman. What's he doing out here? Oh, Major Connors, an unexpected surprise.
That's right, traitor. And I've brought some friends along with me. The odds are 5-1 against you.
What are you talking about?
The general and I had a long talk with someone named Phillips. He was a spy. Can you imagine it? He told us all about your little jaunt to the ice moon Santiga. He died, Richards, trying to remember how to scream.
You killed Phillips?
Of course. But you're the one marked for elimination now, Richards. General Derek gave the order herself. Corps Command wants you dead, traitor.
I might prove more difficult to kill than you think, Connors.
I sincerely hope not, because the moment you die, I become squadron commander. A pity. A brilliant career, and you throw it all away to find your rebel father's memory. Any brave last words, Colonel?
No, Connors, no more words. Vectors set. Shields extended. Trigger pulses armed.
Bobo, he's right behind you.
It's 4-1 now, Connors. You'll have to do better than that.
Red line, red line. Power boosters aren't responding, Major. Breaking off to return to base.
I'm tired of these malfunctions, Lipton. Get it taken care of this time. Daniels, take Lipton's place in formation.
3-1, Connors.
Turn inside him, Daniels. You got him. Fire, Daniels. Fire. Good shooting. His starboard engine is torn apart.
Yeah, real good, Daniels. Too good. Gotta find a way out. Power re-entry.
He's trying to escape. Heading for Cygnus 3. I'm right behind you, Richards. Can't miss at this range. Cease fire. Readouts confirm. There is no way he can survive the crash. Mission final. Protojets return to base. Connors.
G-forces. 25,000 meters left, falling at about 1,000 meters a second. There's a forest below. If I can make the angle shallow enough, I just might have a chance. Manual crash shield in place. I'm going in.
Can't use my left arm. What's that? Hover jets? Hold on a bit longer. Help me. Please. Help me.
The secret of Dominion. Have you discovered it? And what is Emerald Tree? More clues follow in Episode 2, Rebels Roused.
Hey, Kristen, how's it tracking?
With Carvana Value Tracker.
What else?
Oh, it's tracking. In fact, Value Surge Alert, trucks up 2.5%. Vans down 1.7%.
Just as predicted.
Mm-hmm.
So, we gonna...
I don't know. Could sell, could hold.
The power to always know our car's worth.
Exhilarating, isn't it?
Tracking.
Always know your car's worth with Carvana Value Tracker.